Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, December the 14th. The House of Representatives yesterday passed a bill that would outlaw interrogation methods, harsh interrogation methods like waterboarding, that the CIA has used against suspected terrorists. The vote was 222 to 199. The House approved this measure to require intelligence agents to comply with the Army Field Manual, which meets the Geneva Conventions on the Treatment of War Prisoners and prohibits torture. The bill passed amid a congressional probe into the recent disclosure that the CIA destroyed videotapes of Al-Qaeda suspects undergoing waterboarding. The Senate still has to act on this bill, and the White House has threatened a veto. We will wonder this hour, what do you want to see happen on this issue? Do you consider waterboarding torture and believe the use of it does more harm than good? Or do you think that the CIA gains life-saving information using waterboarding and didn't do anything wrong when waterboarded Al-Qaeda suspects? We had a guest on Wednesday who took this viewpoint and riled many of you up, and especially when he posed the question of whether you would approve of waterboarding a terror suspect if your own child's life could be saved if it were done. Many of you demanded a different guest with a different perspective on this issue, so we found one of the best, and we will welcome your questions and comments for him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Alfred McCoy, a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is the author of many books, including A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So this the House passed this bill to outlaw waterboarding. Was this a good move?
Yes. The question is, of course, whether or not it'll survive the legislative process. This would be the third piece of major legislation in the past 2 years, starting with the Detainee Treatment Act 2005, the Military Commissions Act 2006, and if this passes, this would be the third. The first law, Detainee Treatment Act 2005, was introduced by Senator McCain and other members of the U.S. Senate in order to provide legal protections for detainees at Guantanamo and to stop torture. The Bush administration deftly rewrote that law, put in some interesting clauses, some amendments during the legislative process that actually, instead of protecting detainees and blocking torture, actually allowed the detainees to be held longer. In other words, in the legislative process, the original intention was completely reversed. Instead of restricting torture, helping detainees, that bill actually wound up, because of amendments, doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, and you say there's no question that waterboarding is torture.
I would argue that waterboarding is the cruelest form of torture that one could possibly conceive of.
Why?
It's because of something called the mammalian diving reflex. Do you know what it is, Joy?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, you have it, I have it, every human being has it. If you and I were, let's say, to crash into, try and go out ice fishing prematurely on Lake Mendota and we'd fall through the water, how long do you think you'd last under the water with no air?
Less than a minute.
You might go as much as 3 minutes. Mm. Okay, now, if your grandchild, you'd been holding your grandchild and that child fell down with you under the water, how long would the child last?
Less than a minute.
No, 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. What happened was is that in the 1950s in Holland, cars would go over into the canals, which don't have barriers, in the cold of winter. Rescue workers would arrive, and working very quickly in 20 minutes, they get the child out of the vehicle, completely immersed in water for up to 20 minutes. They would first of all assume the child would be dead. The child would revive very quickly. Then they'd assume there'd be permanent brain damage. They'd rush the child to the hospital. No damage whatsoever. It turns out that As mammals, we have the mammalian diving reflex. The body shuts down all the organs except the one organ that needs oxygen constantly in order to survive and not be damaged, the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it husbands, it delivers the oxygen to the brain to keep it alive and healthy. In other words, as mammals, we have in our biology a deeply ingrained fear of drowning.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the most fundamental fears. It's not something learned or cultured. Let's say like when somebody puts a gun to your head to play Russian roulette, which is a torture technique, it requires that you know what a gun is, that you know it's loaded. It requires a good deal of specific and cultural learning in order to instill that fear. But this is something that's inbuilt into our biology. So when the technique constricts the breathing through drowning, and by the way, it's been described as simulated drowning. No, it's not simulated drowning. It's drowning. You are drowning when you're waterboarded. And what happens is the body reaches deep into that genetic program and sends a signal to the brain, death. And those signals go, death, death, death. Now, that's the deepest human fear that most of us only have maybe once or twice in our life, seriously, at the hour of our death. It's this total fear of dying. There is no greater human fear,
mm-hmm.
and we are genetically coded for that. In the 1950s, during the French pacification of Algeria and the battle for Algiers in 1957, the 10th paratroopers conducted a systematic campaign of torture. They tortured about 30 to 40% of the adult male population of the old city of Algiers, and they used this technique, which is a venerable French technique. They water piped most of those. They also water piped a French colonial journalist, a man named Henri Allègue, who wrote a memoir. And in his memoir, he described how he tried to constrict his breathing. And he said, in a memorable passage, he said, "Then a terrible feeling, that of death itself, took possession of me." And that's what he was describing,
yeah.
without knowing it, because we didn't know what it was. That was, he's describing that, in fact, his body was telling his brain that he was dying.
I'm going to have to mull that one over. Let's all think about that as we check our local weather forecast and then continue talking with and taking your questions for Alfred McCoy, who is author of, among other books, A Question of Torture. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. After 4, it's Your Views on the News. You can call in with your choice of what news story has your attention this week. Well, the news story that has our attention this hour is that of waterboarding and those CIA tapes that were destroyed recently that showed Al-Qaeda suspects being waterboarded. Congress is up in arms over this. And the House did pass yesterday a bill that would outlaw waterboarding. The White House has threatened a veto of that. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Is waterboarding torture? And is it a big deal that the CIA was waterboarding Al-Qaeda suspects and then destroyed those tapes recently? Your questions and thoughts on this, welcome for our guest, Alfred McCoy, professor of history at UW-Madison and an author of many books, including A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. We have so many callers. Let me go to the phones. Mike in Appleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I don't have a question. I have a comment and possibility, if you would do it, a chance for rebuttal. We're facing an enemy that, you know, waterboarding probably is mild in comparison to what they do. They beat their soldiers, they crush their testicles and vices, and all sorts of unpleasant things of that nature. They're also very handy with electric drills and drilling into body parts.
Yeah, we've got a bad connection, so I need you to be briefer. We get it. The terrorists do terrible things.
Yes. And so, you know, if the thought line of the type of, you know,
Yeah, you know what? The cell phone is going on you, Mike. I'm very sorry. How about waterboarding is nothing compared to what terrorists could do to us, Alfred McCoy?
When the Detainee Treatment Act 2005 was being debated, that argument, which Republican conservatives put forward all the time, was made on the floor of the United States Senate. And Senator John McCain, who was a victim of torture at the hands of the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, stood up and said, "It's not about them. This is about us." In other words, are we no different than Al-Qaeda? Are we monsters like they are? No, we're not. We're one of the greatest experiments in human liberty. We have been a leader in the campaign against torture. We enshrined a prohibition against torture in the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which requires that no evidence be submitted in a U.S. court that involves self-incrimination. Why did, in 1791, did the authors of the Bill of Rights bar self-incrimination because the only circumstance in which a person would self-incriminate in the 18th century was when they'd been tortured? It's written into the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah. What about Professor McCoy, that former CIA agent who's been making the rounds, saying that apparently he knows about this waterboarding and this Al-Qaeda suspect who, he says, you know, started talking about all sorts of future terrorist plots and gave his interrogators all sorts of valuable information that, whatever, saved lives because of the waterboarding?
That's John Kiriakou, who has been on Wisconsin Public Radio and been on television all across the media. It turns out that last Sunday the New York Times carried an article that said that when Abu Zubaydah was first captured, he was turned over to the FBI, which started their non-coercive interrogation techniques, and the FBI believed that they were making gains. The CIA was dissatisfied with the pace of that, and therefore they waterboarded him, and he gave information. Now, John Kiriakou and others, like President Bush, have been saying this information saved lives. They provide no specifics whatsoever. I'm, frankly, deeply suspicious of John Kiriakou. Suddenly, in the midst of this huge controversy over the CIA destroying tapes, when both parties in both houses of Congress are outraged and angry, suddenly pop out of nowhere comes the CIA team leader who tells us that it worked and it's necessary. 50 years ago, when this nation first started allowing the CIA to experiment with and use torture, we did that because of a national panic over brainwashing. A man named Edward Hunter wrote a book called Brainwashing in Red China that became a national sensation, bestseller, many editions, and he convinced the United States that brainwashing was this near miraculous technique. In order to stop this ruthless communist enemy, we too had to use similar techniques. Well, that book told us all everything about brainwashing and everything about the issue except for one significant thing. It didn't tell us that Edward Hunter was a career CIA operative who was posing as a freelance journalist for Miami Daily News and other newspapers. In other words, CIA disinformation 50 years ago when they got the authorization to use these techniques, and now when those techniques are under fire, pop, out comes a CIA operative out of nowhere. Supposedly, despite the confidentiality restrictions, he can talk freely about this. This is, I think, agency disinformation. That's what we're dealing with here. Mm. This is media manipulation by the agency. In Wisconsin Public Radio, he referred to the fact that, well, it turned out his contract barred him from writing but not from speaking. How does he know that? And by the way, if the CIA doesn't agree with that legal interpretation, they could sue him. They could destroy him financially. They could tie him up in courts, take away his pension. Was he given some signal from the CIA? Nobody's asking these kinds of questions. I'm deeply suspicious of John Kiriakou popping up just at this very moment.
Yeah. Stephen Freedom is next. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. I had to call in about 20 years ago while I was a naval air crewman. I went to a school called Sears School, and it's a search and an evasion school, and part of the curriculum was to be a prisoner of war. And during that time, I had all the non-coercive stuff tried on me. I was beat, sleep deprivation, But the one thing I remember after 20 years was when they strapped me to the board, put a cloth over my face, and I, as your guest said, thought I was dying. To me, there's no doubt it is torture. And to answer the question posed by the other speaker, what would I do if my child was going to be killed? I don't think I'd want my child to live in a society where we torture, because then I would feel that we've already lost. I really support our ideals. I spent 26 years of my life defending those ideals, and it really saddens me to think that we can rationalize ourselves into this situation. And I would just say, anybody in government that thinks that waterboarding is a useful tool, let them have it, and then see what they say. Thanks.
Thank you for calling in. A reaction, Professor McCoy?
Yes, there's no question that waterboarding is viewed everywhere in the world, except right now certain elements of the United States, as torture. For example, in 1541, the Paris Inquisition published an interrogation manual, and they have graphic illustration of torture techniques in this manual from the 16th century. They called waterboarding, and it's a graphic showing exactly the technique used by the CIA. There's a wood cut print, and the caption for that is Tortura Gallicae Ordinariae, or Standard French Torture. In the 16th century, they knew it's torture. During the Philippine-American War in around 1900, the United States Army prosecuted officers who used this technique against Filipinos. They regarded it as torture and a war crime. During World War II, we prosecuted Japanese officers who did it to Americans. In other words, going back nearly 400 years, waterboarding has been regarded by both U.S. and by Europeans as torture. There's no question about it.
Yeah, is there any question, though, that terrorism suspects are not technically prisoners of war, that they're not the military members of some particular country, but people who, you know, cut off the heads of civilians?
First of all, yes, but again, we're not them. And also, no matter what the status of these people might be, combatants, or that curious category that the Bush administration created, unlawful combatants, they're still human beings. And the UN Convention Against Torture, for example, does not refer, this is not a Geneva Convention for treatment of prisoners of war, this is a universal convention for the treatment of all human beings. All right? Mm-hmm. These are universal laws. The UN Declaration of Human Rights, which, by the way, Eleanor Roosevelt helped author back in the late 1940s when it was adopted by the United Nations, has a prohibition against torture under all conditions as a human right. So this is not question of the rules of war. This is question of the laws of human rights.
Yeah, and we only have a minute before a news break, less than a minute, actually. What do you make of that question that not only our guests, but I hear others posing? If your, you know, a loved one's life could be saved if this were done, would you approve of it then?
It's a trick question. It creates a binary choice between this or that, and the real world choices are not like that. It's a variation of the ticking time bomb scenario. Mm-hmm. That conservatives such as Alan Dershowitz have long used to justify torture. The show 24 broadcast that, and they have a ticking time bomb scenario virtually in every episode.
Yeah.
And it repeats it over and over again. It's a false choice. That's not the choices we face in the real world.
Alfred McCoy, our guest, professor of history at UW-Madison, talking with us about waterboarding and torture. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Friday, December the 14th. The House of Representatives has approved an intelligence bill that would prohibit the CIA from using waterboarding and other harsh interrogation methods. The Senate still must act before the bill can go to President Bush, and the White House has threatened a veto. This bill was passed yesterday amid a furor over the recently revealed news that the CIA waterboarded al-Qaeda suspects in 2002 and then destroyed videotapes of those interrogations in 2005, I believe. The CIA director testified about the issue before the House and Senate Intelligence Committees this week. We are talking about the CIA tapes. We're talking about the issue of waterboarding. We're talking about this legislation and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Alfred McCoy, professor of history at UW-Madison, author of many books, including A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions on this for our guest. And before we go back to the phones, Professor McCoy, what do you make of the news that key congressional leaders did know about the CIA waterboarding back in 2002?
Not surprising. I think when President Bush authorized in 2002 enhanced interrogation techniques, no doubt the nature of those was communicated in some form to Congress. And waterboarding was one of those techniques that President Bush authorized. I think it's indicative of the unwillingness of Congress to engage this issue, the unwillingness of Congress to actually restrain the executive on the issue of torture. For example, just last year, when President Bush introduced the Military Commissions Act 2006 to overturn the Supreme Court decision, which had basically given habeas corpus to detainees in Guantanamo, Congress passed that legislation without amendment. And that legislation contains within it provisions that in effect, authorizes the CIA use of psychological torture techniques. So Congress has, although there's a good deal of rhetoric and there are individual statements by senators and congressmen opposed to torture in general, Congress has not proved effective in checking the administration on the issue of torture.
Yeah. Do you agree with Senator Biden, who says that there needs to be an independent counsel looking into this whole mess because Michael Mukasey, the new attorney general, wouldn't even answer whether or not he considered waterboarding torture when he had his confirmation hearings?
Mukasey's confirmation is a really fascinating topic. I agree with Biden in general, yes, but not just on the destruction of tapes, okay? I think it needs to be an inquiry much broader into the kind of techniques that were permitted the CIA, the specific use of those techniques. And I think also Congress should actually examine the claims of effectiveness because the administration floats these claims all the time and then offers no specifics. So I think, yes, an inquiry into this issue is more than merited, but you know, it should be beyond the narrow specifics of when and where the tapes were destroyed. It should be actually what's on those tapes and why waterboarding and other similar techniques were permitted.
Robin and Stevens Point, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the topic, and I really appreciate the information that I'm getting about the sort of techniques that they use that I don't really get from the news that I see on television. But my comment is that I didn't know that they use these sort of techniques until this broke on the news. And, I mean, I live in the middle of Wisconsin. I don't see any sort of action whatsoever. But nothing has really eroded my faith in the United States and made me so ashamed to be an American as hearing that we did this sort of thing. And people that seem to define torture by if it actually causes the physical sensation that can be defined as pain seems to be ridiculous. And if we use the same techniques as our enemies do, what really makes us any different from our enemies? It seems to be more of a matter of geography and a toss-up of where you were born to decide what side you play on. And I guess that's kind of my whole take on the issue.
I'm glad you called in. Professor McCoy.
Yes, the caller's sense of anger and dismay that the United States has stooped to use these techniques, I think, is as indicative of how serious an issue this is. Torture on the surface seems a very small issue, but in the modern world, there is no other act by a state that can so diminish its dignity. Over the past 250 years, since the Enlightenment began struggling against torture, torture has become identified with tyrants and illegitimate governments. And the sentiment of dismay that the caller feels, as she says, speaking from the heart of America, is, of course, double. It's redoubled beyond our borders. There is no single act by the United States that we've done within decades that has so damaged our prestige internationally as, one, the use of these torture techniques, and, two, the parallel incarceration without trial of the detainees in Guantanamo. This has done enormous damage to U.S. prestige. For example, the caller mentioned the difference also between psychological and physical techniques. Under the UN Convention Against Torture, there's a prohibition against severe psychological or severe mental and physical pain. The UN Convention gives equal weight to the physical and psychological methods. Here in the United States, we've exempted much of our law, much of our restrictions against torture, exempted these psychological techniques from the writ of the UN Convention. And thus, in the United States, we've legalized psychological torture techniques that elsewhere in the world, in fact, everywhere else in the world, are regarded as a violation of the UN Convention. So we're at variance with international practice, and our prestige is suffering in international opinion accordingly.
Now, President Bush and administration officials say over and over again that the United States does not torture, but have never really admitted that they allowed things like waterboarding or would not talk about specific interrogation methods used. So is this the news of the tapes, the first that we've had some real confirmation that this was going on?
There have been reports about it. This is reported in the New York Times and other major media going back about 3 years now. But this is the first absolute confirmation, yes, that these techniques have been used. Mm-hmm. And again, that's why suddenly, bang, out of the bowels of the CIA, it just so happens that the lead interrogator pops up at this critical moment when the agency is under attack and tells us these techniques work. This is a reflection also of a long-running debate within the U.S. government between the FBI and the CIA over the most effective techniques. The CIA has for 50 years developed and propagated and practiced torture techniques. The FBI, by contrast, has refined empathetic, non-coercive techniques. The FBI claims that their methods are far more effective, and indeed there's evidence to indicate that.
Yeah. An email from Bill in Madison. Has important, useful, relevant information been found by waterboarding?
The Bush administration, President Bush, has laid claims that we got this very valuable information. This CIA operative, who supposedly the man who led the capture of Abu Zubaydah, he claims that valuable information was gained. But then we're not given any specifics.
Right.
The administration has long claimed in justification of the use of these torture techniques that they produce valuable information, but again, no specifics.
Yeah.
By contrast, actually, there is solid indication that the torture techniques produce bad information. And I can explain that, Joy, very quickly, if you wish.
Yeah, and we only have about a minute before a weather break.
Oh, okay. Mm. We can come back to it, but basically, right at the start of the war on terror, we captured a top al-Qaeda suspect, and he was turned over to the Egyptians for torture. The CIA may have had a chance to torture him, and under torture, he gave us information saying that Saddam Hussein had trained al-Qaeda in weapons of mass destruction. Colin mm-hmm. Powell stood up in front of the UN, used that information. It was an embarrassment to him, the United States, and a year later, the CIA branded this source as a fabricator. So, yes, you'll get information from torture, but most of that information is false.
Our guest is Alfred McCoy, professor of history at UW-Madison, author of many books, including A Question of Torture. We're talking about torture and CIA tapes and waterboarding of al-Qaeda suspects, and the House yesterday passing a bill that would outlaw methods like waterboarding. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Alfred McCoy, a professor of history at UW-Madison, about torture. I hope you stay tuned, by the way. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we will welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. It's our Week in Review, coming up in our next hour. David in Menasha is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just find it horribly disturbing and utterly just overwhelming that we're spending all this time, all of Congress's money. I mean, congressmen get paid a fair amount of money, all their time, all of our efforts worrying about these monsters that murdered 5-year-old, 6-year-old kids that were burned to death on 9/11, the horrific, hellish nightmare that those people went through on 9/11, jumping to their death. And we're not talking about them. We're talking about the rights and the political football surrounding the horrific monsters that did it before, and they're going to do it again. And somehow in our own self-absorbed, selfish political agenda, we've got Congress derailed into worrying about the rights of these monsters instead of trying to prevent these innocent people who were burned alive, who jumped to their death, who went through a horrible, horrific, hellish end of their life by the hands of these monsters.
Yeah, David.
Where's the time for the dead? Where's the appreciation and the time that Congress should be spending to show some compassion? We got compassion for horrific monsters, murders. We've got no time, no money, no compassion for the poor victims that were burned alive.
Yeah, what about that, Professor McCoy?
Again, as John McCain has said, it's not about them, it's about us. The reason the U.S. Congress is debating this issue is because American prestige has suffered tremendous damage through the establishment of Guantanamo, the holding of hundreds of detainees for now up to 6 years without any trial whatsoever. Furthermore, revelations that the United States has engaged in torture, the exposure of the Abu Ghraib photographs showing torture techniques. This has done incalculable damage to U.S. prestige. The suffering of the victims of 9/11 is beyond a doubt, but that's not the issue here. The issue is how the majesty of the American state is carried out, is protected and realized in our handling of the war on terror. The damage that Guantanamo and torture has done to our nation's leadership in the world has been incalculable. And Congress is well advised, to deal with these issues. There is no single act that can damage the prestige of a modern state so severely, so unalterably as torture.
Yeah. Thank you, David, for the call. Louise in Hillsboro. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. It is so distressing to me that this administration is so uncreative that we have to solve. The only way to solve our problems is to go to war, and the only way to get information is torture, and there just is nothing else. It makes me ashamed, and especially, you know, that last call talking about monsters. let's look for the people. Well, we're trying to get information to prevent this from happening again, not to get revenge. I wouldn't want my children to live in a world if that's what our country is going to become, a bunch of brutal monsters as well. Thank you.
Does that speak for itself, Professor McCoy?
Well, no, the caller does raise a very good point about, more or less, are there, this is a choice, are there alternatives? And yes, there are clearly alternatives. Over the last 50, 60 years, the United States has developed two very distinct interrogation doctrines. The CIA has refined very sophisticated methods of psychological torture, of which waterboarding is one. And simultaneously, the FBI has developed extremely sophisticated techniques of empathetic interrogation. It's clear that the FBI techniques work. For example, in 1998, Al-Qaeda bombed our embassies in East Africa. The FBI then had control over counterintelligence. They were the lead agency in that investigation. They interrogated the Al-Qaeda captives with empathetic techniques. They got accurate intelligence, some of our best intelligence about Al-Qaeda. They, moreover, did this perfectly legally. They then took those people, they put them before U.S. federal courts, they were tried, convicted, and put in prison. We got good information, and moreover, we did nothing to damage U.S. prestige internationally. So the FBI methods work. They work very effectively. The CIA methods may or may not work.
Yeah. Thank you, Louise. Bill in Deerfield. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, so my theory is that not torturing saves lives and makes us a stronger country. And it's been that way from the very, very beginning. Great Britain was using Hessians. They were doing horrific things. George Washington gave a general order, if you capture a Hessian, do not torture them. One-third of the country was still pro-Britain. They saw by his actions that he was someone they could deal with. And from the very beginning, our country was founded on decent treatment of prisoners. After World War II, Germans surrendered to the United States, not Russia, and that helped us win the space race. Gentleman who is concerned about 9/11, if President Bush hadn't been on vacation for the entire month and looked at some of those PDBs, maybe it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Oh, not torturing saves lives, too, Professor McCoy?
Yeah, it's clear that the FBI's techniques of empathetic interrogation work better. Let's remember our circumstance here. When we capture al-Qaeda captives, al-Qaeda, like any guerrilla or underground organization, when somebody gets arrested, automatically reacts to adjust the technique. If there's an operation planned, it gets canceled. If somebody is hiding in a certain place, everybody gets moved. Contacts are shifted. This is part of any kind of underground organization. So, in effect, any captive has very limited information that's of tactical utility that's time-sensitive. What they do have is information that's of strategic value that's not time-sensitive. The FBI's empathetic techniques were actually first developed by the U.S. Marine Corps in the Pacific in World War II. And there was a Japanese-speaking missionary, Major Moran, who developed these techniques. These techniques found that if they got a Japanese POW on islands like Saipan and Tinian in the Pacific in World War II, they could get order of battle intelligence from Japanese POWs within 48 hours. That was effective tactical intelligence. Techniques worked. And indeed, the FBI's techniques have worked as well. The CIA's coercive techniques get a mix of information, some accurate, most of it inaccurate. And we don't need the speed with which you can extract information from torture.
Gilbert in Duluth. Hi, you're on the air. Gilbert, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Well, I just said I don't think we should turn evil for... Yes, I'm here. I don't think we should turn evil for evil.
Yeah, I think you're listening to the delay on the radio, so that's confusing you. Gilbert wanted to say if this administration has condoned the waterboarding and that he thinks that this is an impeachable offense. Any reaction to that?
No, I don't think it's an impeachable offense unless it can be demonstrated that a law has been broken. And given the nature of U.S. law, given the legal findings that the administration has gotten to protect itself from just such an action, no. That, by the way, that concern, I think, about prosecution or impeachment accounted for Attorney General Mukasey's rather bizarre performance in front of the U.S. Congress. Under oath, he actually stood up as a federal judge who had tried torture cases and told the U.S. Senate that he had no idea what waterboarding is. And then Senator Whitehouse from Rhode Island actually stood there and explained it to Judge Mukasey in detail. I find it almost incredible that Judge Mukasey could not, at that point, have known what waterboarding is. After all, again, a federal judge experienced in terror trials. Yet, as a nation, we all subscribe to the fiction. Why? And then Judge Mukasey, once he was advised, said he wouldn't know if it constituted torture. He had to take that position, because if he had said that waterboarding is torture, then when confirmed, it would have been incumbent upon him to investigate, if not indict, all of the officers who conducted waterboarding and all of those who authorized it right into the administration in the White House.
Yeah, let me ask you in our final moment here, an email from Jeff in Crawford County says the U.S. ratified the Geneva Convention long ago and is already bound under international law. No new law is needed. Speaking of this House of Representatives bill that outlaws waterboarding.
Actually, yes, we do need the legislation, because although you can ban torture, you can ban cruel and unusual punishment, then you get down to the specifics of what constitutes it. And unfortunately, on U.S. law, beginning with our ratification of the U.N. Convention Against Torture, and then in subsequent federal legislation which gave legal force to that convention, U.S. law, we have excluded most forms of psychological torture. We basically split the U.N. Convention down the middle. We prohibited physical methods. We permitted most psychological techniques, of which waterboarding is one. Therefore, we need further legislation to correct this problem in U.S. law so that our laws and our ratification of the U.N. Treaty can conform to the practice of the rest of the world.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We're out of time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Roy.
Alfred McCoy, professor of history at UW-Madison, author of A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Coming up Monday between 7 and 8, as we do every Monday, it's our State Capitol Report, where we talk about the latest in state politics. That's Monday between 7 and 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.